The so-called Stand Your Ground law, cited in the media recently as justification for the killing of Florida teenager Trayvon Martin, is under scrutiny now. Kentucky has a similar law, where essentially someone could use deadly force against a person who is threatening their life. To help shed more light on this law in Kentucky, I'm joined by Commonwealth Attorney Mark Blankenship. He serves Callaway and Marshall counties. Mr. Blankenship, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
First of all, if you could just explain to me Kentucky's Castle Doctrine, which is essentially the Stand Your Ground law.
Right. The Castle Doctrine, for those historians out there, goes all the way back to the 17th century, and Sir Edward Coke started. That was an English idea that the home is your castle. So when we're home, we're in our castles. And so if in the middle of the day or the night someone is breaking into my home, I do not have to ask them why they're there or warn them. Our law says that is a reasonable apprehension of fear, the fact that someone is in the castle that's not supposed to be there. So I can use deadly force within the home without any sort of warning, without even knowing whether this person intends to use deadly force on me. Now, I would caution any citizen to be as careful as possible before you pull the trigger, to make sure that the person in your home is not someone that has a legal right to be there.
When did Kentucky adopt this Castle Doctrine?
We've had it for a long time. It got improved, I guess you could say, in 2006. They added some language to include not only your home, but an occupied vehicle. So if I'm out in my car and someone is trying to get in my car, it's the same as coming into my home. There's some language in the statute that says if wherever you are, you have a legal right to be there, then you do not have to run and retreat if you're confronted with force. That will not be later held against you that, well, you had an option. You could have just run. You could have left. But if I have a right to be where I am and you're coming at me with deadly force, I don't have to run. I can return deadly force in exchange for deadly force. Now, just because the law allows us to do that doesn't mean as citizens we don't have a duty to each other, you know, the ethics of the situation. And what we don't want to ever do is with these laws that someone couldn't use these laws to kill somebody. Like me inviting you over to my home, nobody knowing that but me and you. And so I've invited you over and I'm expecting you, but instead of that, I've decided to kill you. We want to have a situation where the facts really justify. Every case has to be looked at. And you don't want to, by going overboard with these laws, create a situation where people abuse them.
Who looks at these cases? Who makes the decision whether or not you can press criminal charges?
It's a combination of a lot of people. I've heard this by my detective and other people that have been around law enforcement a long time. The first police officer on the scene is really the first judge on the scene. So the first one there, as they gather evidence, and then it's looked at with a lot of different eyes. We're taking a case to a grand jury this week where a man was killed. He was along with his girlfriend, and we don't have all the facts yet to sort it all out, but they apparently had a legal right to be there. They'd been invited over to an apartment, and this was an apartment building setting. Something goes a little bit haywire at some point in all this, and the victim and his girlfriend end up going into another section of the building, which is not an apartment. It's just a little area. 1 year ago, I think it was a laundromat or something, but now it's like a little work room, and it's very small, about like the area we're sitting in here, which is not very large. But they bring weapons for some reason. The girl has a weapon, and the man that gets killed has some kind of a stunt gun or something. And the witnesses, all that we have are the people that were inside there are making them to be the aggressors. And somehow in all of this, the defendant that was originally charged with murder was able to get the gun away from the female and shoot the male. But in that process, see, the police are looking at it. I'm looking at it as Commonwealth attorney. I've had my Commonwealth detective go look at it. And now we're going to have 12 people on a grand jury look at it. So in all of that, it's being looked at to determine, was this what we refer to as a justified murder? I mean, the guy intentionally killed another human being, which is the definition of murder. but it's justified in certain circumstances. But did he have the right to shoot him? The defendant saying he's unarmed, they're charging him, and he did what he could to save his own life and to save maybe the other people that were in there. And so if the grand jury, when they hear all that, if that's how they see it, which is sort of the way I see it at this point because I don't have any other witnesses. Even the female has now killed herself to make any sort of case. I needed her, and she had an appointment with my office. And 2 days prior, she kills herself.
It's not always cut and dry in a situation like this.
No.
When you add the vehicle in as a possible dwelling, and if you use deadly force and you use a gun, are you required to have a permit to have that
yes.
gun with you?
We have the carry permit. You can carry a weapon in our state, but mm-hmm. you're to demonstrate a little competence.
So if someone, though, didn't have those permits, but then they were in their vehicle and they used deadly force on someone to protect their vehicle, their property, but they were illegally possessing the gun, how does something like that work out?
That's a really good question. The statute doesn't really address that. I think it would still come down to whether there was a reasonable apprehension of fear. The person that ends up doing the shooting needs to be able to prove that they had a reasonable apprehension of fear for their own life, that they thought something was about to happen. It's imminent, and to defend myself or to defend someone else in the car, I use deadly force. When it's real close like that, it's going to come down to a jury question.
What if it were a fight that could potentially turn deadly, but in a rural area, you know, in the middle of nowhere, and you're on somebody else's property?
You mean like a land between the lakes or something?
Sure, yeah.
People are camping, and they're packing weapons.
Yeah.
Those are probably the most difficult at all.
So
that's sort of like you have in the Martin case. You know, mm-hmm. they're out. They're not in a residence. They're not in a car. They're out on a public sidewalk,
mm-hmm.
and this thing occurs. And that's what makes that case so tough. And you've got the 911 call where he's told not to pursue him. So, you know, here in Kentucky, we'd be saying you didn't have a legal right to be where you were because you were told not to pursue. And now, if I look across, you know, in a public area, in a subdivision or in, say, an apartment building, and I see someone breaking into someone else's home, 911 should be called immediately. But now, as a good citizen or as a good Samaritan, I'm still wanting to help. So I've called 911, but the law, it's going to take a little time for the law to get there. So I go ahead and grab my weapon, and I go over to where this place is. Now, I would be allowed to use deadly force if there is proof, and I can see it, that the person is broken into that home, has deadly force, and they may be getting ready to kill the person that lives there. I would be allowed under Kentucky law to use deadly force to save my neighbor's life.
Do you think all of the focus on the standard ground law is justified based on the Martin case?
No. No, I think that's been sensationalized a little bit. Of course, it's such a tragedy, too, that it breaks people's hearts, all of us, to think about a young man like that gunned down and then he's unarmed. So, you know, we just hate to see that in our country. But then when you throw in the different races, it makes it even more complicated.
I'm assuming that you don't think Kentucky will look again at its standard ground law based on...
We haven't had any kind of case that I can think of that's given us a lot of problem with this. Most of the self-defense things seem to work themselves out along the way.
Commonwealth Attorney Mark Blankenship, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.